Good morning and welcome to Talk Louisiana. It's Monday, September 25th, 2023. We're so glad you found us this morning and are joining our conversation. I'm Julie Baxter Payer, and I'm filling in as a guest host for Jim Engster this morning here on Talk Louisiana. It's great to be with you. Talk Louisiana is brought to you by First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And we have a great hour coming up. If you'd like to ask a question or be a part of the conversation to talk with our guests, the number is 1-877-217-5757. And two guests you'll not want to miss talking with this morning. The 19th Judicial District Court in East Baton Rouge is working right now to bring a veterans treatment court here to East Baton Rouge Parish. And we'll talk about a town hall meeting that's coming up where you can find out all about it and how you can support if you'd like. Coming up this morning, though, Brigadier General Mike Cushman is joining us with the inside story of how the 22nd JDC, the Judicial District Court in Covington, their veterans treatment court got started up and how it's working successfully on the North Shore, what the challenges are as we look to what might be coming here to East Baton Rouge. And then later in the hour, we'll hear the very latest from the Walls Project and its Baton Roots Community Farm. They were just awarded $6 million from the U.S. Forest Service to help grow a local agroforestry project. So how is that program going to help support affordable housing here in Baton Rouge, make our city more climate resilient? We'll have S.K. Grohl with the Walls Project. He'll be here with us to share this story. But first, our first guest this morning is Brigadier General Mike Cushman. He is the military advisor to the 22nd Judicial District Court's Veterans Treatment Court on the North Shore. It operates in the parishes of St. Tammany and Washington Parish. Good morning, General Cushman, and welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Julie. Glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. And first of all, tell us, I know you're a veteran. Tell us a little bit about what branch you served in and what your military service entailed.
Well, I spent 37 years in the Air Force. My last assignment prior to retirement was assistant to the National Reconnaissance Office called the NRO, one of our country's least known intelligence agencies. In that role, I was principal advisor to the Undersecretary of the Air Force and director of the NRO on all reserve forces matters.
Well, that sounds like an important job, and I know that you consider one of your most important efforts right now this Veterans Court in the 22nd Judicial District Court. What is your connection to that court?
So, as military advisor, I serve on the judge's staff, report directly to the presiding judge, the Honorable Raymond Childress, and in that capacity, I work with our treatment providers. I work with the Louisiana Department of Veterans Affairs, the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, and other supporting community partners that all contribute to the success of our Veterans Court.
And I want to talk a little bit about why the 22nd Judicial District Court started up a Veterans Court and what it means for the veterans in those two parishes that that court serves. I just want to mention to our listeners, some of you know I do work for the Louisiana Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Department of Veterans Affairs certainly supports these veterans treatment courts around the country, and our state cabinet agency, LDVA, certainly supports them here in Louisiana. But why, General Cushman, did the 22nd JDC see a need to start up a veterans court?
Okay. A little bit of context here. About 15 years ago in 2008, up in Erie County, Buffalo, New York, a district judge by the name of Judge Robert T. Russell, started this movement that became a structured veteran-centric court model that differs from the traditional model of judge, prosecutor, defense, and jury. So in around 2015, Judge Childress happened to be at American Bar Association conference in New Orleans, and Judge Russell happened to be the speaker. And it really was an eye-opener for Judge Childress, who had experience in starting up drug courts. So he took a notion to it, started doing some homework, collected some statistics, not the least of which was what was the veterans population particularly in St. Tammany Parish, and that was pushing somewhere around 25,000 to 28,000 veterans. So with that in mind and more statistics and with the support of the district attorney, the program required some startup funds, and so that we applied for a startup grant. And about a year and a half it took to set it all up, and we went live on the 1st of April, 2017.
Wow. And how many veterans are participating in the court right now, generally, on a year-to-year basis?
I would say that over the last 7 years, the 22nd has considered well over 200 potential candidates for Veterans Court. And during this period of being in business since April of 2017, we've had 111 veterans admitted to the program. And to be more specific about your question, at any given time, the court is usually working with about 30 veterans and their families spread over the five phases of the program. And I would say that by early November of this year, another month and a half, so we will have graduated 69 veterans who have successfully completed Veterans Court.
And I want to talk a little bit about what that means when they graduate, how a Veterans Treatment Court changes the veterans' experience with the judicial system. But David from Atlanta, actually, is on the line right now on line one. And David, good morning. Welcome to Talk Louisiana. Do you have a question for General Cushman?
Well, actually, I do, and I have a comment, if I may, please. And I'd like to document the source of my information because you might not believe this. It was in the New Orleans Times-Picayune newspaper. The title was "Proposed VA Cuts Rile Some Local Veterans." And I was banned from a 50,000-watt Limbaugh station and called the liar three times for bringing this factual information to the attention of the public. George W. Bush is president of the United States.
I'm sorry, I think we lost David. Thank you, though, for calling in. And I know David has a real concern for supporting veterans, General Cushman. Let's talk a little bit about how a veterans treatment court changes the veterans' experience with the judicial system. What happens that's different if they were just going through the court system without the benefit of a veterans treatment court?
Sure enough. That's a great question. But once again, a little bit of context here. Our experience is that over 90% of justice-involved veterans have one or more conditions, such as comedical morbidities, PTSD, substance use disorder, complex trauma, some with traumatic brain injury, and unfortunately, a few that have either contemplated or attempted suicide. So these conditions obviously have consequences, and they do set the stage for alcohol and substance abuse. Homelessness is there, and wrecked families and relationships, loss of jobs, and if not careers, and it goes on. So to get to the answer to your question, we address this complex challenge by each veteran having a specific recovery plan and a treatment program that is monitored with the assistance of the court team. And all of this is designed to ensure that the veteran who is participating is held accountable for scheduled treatment sessions, appointments, prescribed medications, drug and alcohol testing, the terms of probation, attendance at regular court appearances. I mean, this is a big load. It's highly structured and well-disciplined. The outcome is that the veteran acquires new skills to accomplish recovery and sobriety. And these also provide quick access to VA benefits, services, and care, plus help out with education, training, and employment.
Is a lot of the challenge here the transition back from military service into civilian life, and why is that so difficult for many veterans?
Well, I think it has a lot, in many cases, it has a lot to do with veterans who were in combat deployments. It's a condition that is hard to describe. Everyone reacts in a different way. Kind of stuck on the rest of this.
Well, I know that is one of the biggest challenges in serving veterans in the civilian community and bridging that gap. And we're going to talk about why veterans mentors from the community are so important and why it makes this a different kind of specialty court from perhaps a behavioral health or a drug court. But all of that's coming when we come back, and we're going to talk about what's coming to East Baton Rouge as well, and you'll be able to meet General Cushman here in a week or so. Stay with us. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. I'm Julie Baxter Payer, and I'm sitting in for Jim Engster today. We've been talking with General Mike Cushman, the military advisor to the Veterans Treatment Court in the 22nd Judicial District Court in Covington. But as we mentioned earlier, the 19th Judicial District Court in Baton Rouge is working to establish a veterans court here as well under the leadership of Judges Don Johnson and Judge Ron Johnson. And there is a town hall meeting that will be coming up on October 4th. 2023, that's next week at the main library here on Goodwood at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the public is invited to this. General Cushman will be there. So will our State Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Colonel Joey Strickland, representatives from the court as well. And one of the main reasons for this meeting is that supporters of the court really want to encourage local military veterans to come out to learn about the importance of veteran mentors and what role they play in a successful veterans court. General Cushman, how important are veteran mentors in the court in Covington?
Well, they're very important. This is a absolutely key component of veterans courts is the assignment of a volunteer veteran from the community who will essentially serve as a mentor for the veteran participant that he or she's been assigned to. This is a vital role that's provided by these military veterans who are in our various communities. The mentor and the veteran are paired up as to branch of service and similar service experiences. The 22nd currently has 32 volunteer veteran mentors in service. What do they do? Well, they act as a coach, as a guide, as a role model. For the veteran, the relationship between the mentor and the veteran provides encouragement, I would say guidance, support as the veteran progresses through the program. And the veteran is a real commitment. He or she makes herself available and ready to support the veteran when she or he may feel alone or frustrated or a bit anxious about the way things are going in a way that only another veteran can appreciate and understand.
And General Cushman, you actually have a graduation ceremony every year for the Veterans Court. What does that look like? I know I've attended a couple of them, and I know that there's actually families and involvement from the community at large. Can you talk a little bit about what the graduation ceremony means to the participants?
I sure will. You know, people ask, how do you measure success in this program? And the answer is, well, there are statistics that can answer that. But the real way is on graduation day, when the families come together to participate in this formal commencement ceremony, as we will do for the ninth time this coming November. And if one was in attendance at this, they would witness the graduates as they acknowledge and express individually their appreciation. You would hear a graduate that talk about the highs and the lows of their expectations, their periods of darkness, their recurring temptation to give up, or they'll talk about their satisfaction, if not exuberance, at successes along the way. Their fear of despair at times, but at the end, you're going to witness the rise of the warrior within them to persevere and complete. And then finally, you're going to hear from some of the family members, and you will know what success actually means. Families truly reunited and saved.
It's truly a very moving ceremony. I encourage anyone who is able to attend a Veterans Court graduation to do that. One of the biggest challenges, I know, as with other specialty courts, is funding for this court. And can you talk a little bit about how the community has supported in Covington, how they can in building a Veterans Treatment Court?
Yes. There's always the issue of funding. The first 3 years we were in business, we had federal grants. As we moved, as we matured and as we moved on, we're fortunate to have funding from the Louisiana Supreme Court. But to complement this funding, we appreciate donations. And the donations are expedited, if you will, through a 501(c) called the North Shore Court Foundation. And I think that this foundation actually is in business to do two things. One is to educate the public on what Veterans Court's all about, but the other one is to accept these donations. And what do we do with the money? If there are certain areas that are not covered by the funding that comes from the Supreme Court, and examples of that would be funding specific emergencies, for example, to help out a veteran and his family through an unexpected event affecting his or her family, and that tends to be particularly in the area of housing and transportation.
Right, because it is hard sort of transitioning out from a justice-involved situation into moving back into the civilian life. I was fortunate enough earlier this summer to be able to meet Judge Russell that you you referenced earlier, who actually started Veterans Treatment Court across the country and has helped so many to build their Veterans Treatment Courts. In Louisiana, we have active Veterans Treatment Courts in several places throughout the state, including Lake Charles. There are very vibrant efforts going on in Caddo Parish and in Bossier Parish as well. Some of the courts look different. Jefferson and Orleans have in the past started Veterans Treatment Courts. And one thing, you're coming here to East Baton Rouge, to this town hall. You have been so generous with your time, as has Judge Childress and, of course, the 22nd JDC staff. How important is it that the district attorney and probation and parole and law enforcement in a particular parish be part of this pre-court team that works to work with each veteran's individual case?
Yes. Judge Childress likes to say that you need three things for a successful Veterans Court. First of all, you have to have the population. You have to have a cooperating and supportive and leaning forward district attorney, and you have to have a judge that is willing to take it on, because this is an additional court. The 21st Judicial District covering Livingston, St. Helena, and Tangipahoa parishes just stood theirs up, I think, just about a year ago, and the 22nd was very happy to help them, and we're looking forward to helping the 19th and East Baton Rouge Parish set theirs up.
Well, and that's really how it works, with the support from other parishes, as different law enforcement and judicial groups around the state see the need for this and want to call on their public in their parishes to support. Louisiana has 267,000 veterans and their families, according to Federal VA latest statistics. that are living here in our state. And I know that East Baton Rouge has more than 25,000 veterans in East Baton Rouge Parish. It's rivaling St. Tammany as far as one of the busiest veteran populations in the state. And so certainly some folks are seeing the need to begin to try to build a veterans treatment court here. Judge Don Johnson, Judge Ron Johnson, working heartily on that effort. And you can meet Judge Ron Johnson, as I understand it, and representatives from the court and LDVA and General Cushman next week, October 4th, 3 o'clock at the main library for a town hall meeting. And if you're a veteran, we encourage you to come out and to consider being a mentor for a veterans court when it is developed here in East Baton Rouge Parish. General Cushman, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your work on the North Shore for the veteran population there. And when we come back, we're going to talk with S.K. Grohl, Program Coordinator with the Wall Project's Baton Roots Community Farm, what their plans are for a $6 million grant that the U.S. Forest Service has just awarded to this local nonprofit. You don't want to miss this exciting conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. I'm Julie Baxter Payer, sitting in for Jim Engster today, and we're so glad to have you with us. If you'd like to be a part of our conversation, 1-877-217-5757. We're joined now by the Walls Project. S.K. Grohl is the program coordinator for the Walls Project's Baton Roots Community Farm, and they've just received $6 million from the U.S. Forest Service's Urban and Community Forest Grants. And SK, thank you for joining us. This is, we understand, the largest grant that the Walls Project, a local nonprofit, has ever received. What happens next?
Julie, thank you so much for having me on today. And yes, this is in fact the largest grant that we've ever received. So next is a whole lot of digging in and planning. This is a 5-year grant. And so we've applied collaboratively with some partners locally. That includes Baton Rouge Green, East Baton Rouge Parish Housing Authority, and BREC, the park system. And so for the first about 6 to 12 months of this grant, we're really going to be working with those partners to make sure that the full plan for the 5 years is there and that everything is good to go. And then following that, we'll be launching an apprenticeship program where folks will be able to skill up and learn essential skills in urban forestry, so horticulture, arboriculture, and green infrastructure skills that will hopefully set them up for success in their future careers, as well as be an asset to our region.
And I want to tie in a little bit to what we were talking about earlier in the hour. We were talking about veterans and helping veterans reintegrate back into civilian society when they come back from military service. And I know one of the programs that has been really successful around the country is pairing veterans with agriculture programs, getting them outside, involved in farming, involved in agroforestry type projects as well. So I know that if it can help veterans, I'm sure it can help other people who just want to improve their job skills, maybe take a new turn in their life. I want to stop for a minute because I think a lot of people think that the Walls Project, maybe they think of the murals downtown and in mid-city. Can you tell us how the Walls Project got to Baton Roots Community Farm and what that is?
Absolutely. So, I mean, most folks know the Walls Project through, like you're saying, some of our public artwork, our other community-facing work. But the Walls Project as an organization is really dedicated to tearing down societal barriers that hinder people from living safe, healthy, and prosperous lives across a number of drivers of poverty and inequity. And so one of those things that we've really focused on is public art, and have been doing for a long time, and community building and blight remediation through that public art and community service. But we also do tech training for youth and adults through the Futures Fund, as well as a coalition called One Rouge, which addresses the systemic drivers of poverty across a number of areas of community. Baton Roots Community Farm has been a part of the Walls Project and has been in existence since MLK Fest of 2019, when we broke ground at Breck's Howe Community Park on Winburn Avenue. And at that point in time, you know, the Walls Project was really looking at how the platform of the Walls, the organization itself, could be used to address other drivers of poverty. We know that food insecurity is a huge issue within the country, but also within our community in Baton Rouge. And so the farm is really a place where we both grow food for free for our neighbors to harvest, as well as we teach people how to grow food in their own homes, in their own yards, and hopefully go on in urban agriculture for some of the young folks that we work with. And this project really bridges what we started with urban agriculture and into what we're calling urban agroforestry, which is the combination of trees and permaculture and other kinds of planting along with seasonal vegetable crops. And so we've been working with our fantastic partners at Baton Rouge Green, at BREC, at the Housing Authority, to make sure that all of our sites, as many of our sites as possible, include trees and permaculture, and that we're really looking at like ecosystem-wide solutions for both food insecurity and climate resilience.
So a huge vision here that's beginning to take shape. And I know Southern University also received more than $9 million from the U.S. Forest Service for 12 projects there. We'll touch on that a little bit later. But I do want to go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace, who's on line one. Good morning, Phil. You have a question for S.K. Grohl.
My first question is about getting milkweed going. I understand that's one of the basic food sources for monarch butterflies and for the whole system that insects need, because they're the bottom of the food chain, and gardening and horticulture is also part of renewing our own lives. Anyway, I'm very excited about your program. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Phil. And SK, is that part of the plan here?
So we grow tons of pollinators, milkweed included. What we try to do is at all of our garden sites and farm sites, we make sure that we have pollinator rows surrounding the trees, surrounding the garden beds, and really integrated into our plantings. Because yes, absolutely, it's so essential for us to have beneficial insects. It helps with maintaining your crops over the course of the season. It helps to remove non-beneficial insects and other pests and diseases that might come up. So absolutely, milkweed is a part of those plantings and something that we care about a lot.
I want to talk a little bit about the scope of this project as it relates to tree canopies, because that may not be something that all of our listeners are focused on. Apparently, the Forest Service, in releasing this grant, has actually awarded $209 million across the country to community-based organizations, tribes, municipal and state governments, nonprofit partners like the Walls Project, universities like Southern, all across the Southern region. So $209 million just across the South. It includes cities like Houston, Dallas, Louisville, Miami-Dade County, Atlanta, Jackson, Mississippi. What is the plan, and why is it so important to focus on actually increasing the tree canopy in our capital city, SK?
Absolutely. So, I mean, we know that heat is an incredible threat to our cities and to human beings, right? Research has shown that tree canopy cover can reduce temperatures 11 to 19 degrees Fahrenheit compared to communities with no cover. And we know that also July 2023 was the hottest month on record in communities across the country, including us here in South Louisiana. So trees can mitigate this extreme heat. They can conserve energy. They provide shade, absorb stormwater, create wildlife habitat for those pollinators and beneficial insects across the food chain. And they filter air and water for all of us, right? So an urban tree canopy can lead to better health outcomes for people, but also better economic opportunities and jobs, as well as increased property values across the board. So if you look at neighborhoods where there is a more substantial tree canopy cover, you see that cooling effect, but you also see property values increase. You see a difference in how people are using public space. And we can look at communities in our city, in Baton Rouge, where that tree canopy coverage is not equitable. And we see increased temperatures as well as a reduction in use of public space, or a difference in how public space is used, and a decrease in those property values. So we, you know, there's no silver bullet solution to all of these things, but we really believe that investing in equitable tree canopy coverage has beneficial effects for both human populations as well as economic outcomes in our region.
And not to get in the weeds too much, no pun intended, but any particular types of trees that, I mean, trees take a while to grow. What is the plan? Any particular types that we're looking to see crop up around Baton Rouge?
So we are going to be focused on trees really broadly. You will see some, you know, larger trees. I think for some of our plantings, we'll be able to work with trees that are, you know, have been nursery grown and are a little bit more established and can kind of come in ahead of the game. And then you'll also see some saplings going in, starting from a much younger age and building up over time. We are a community farming program, and so we really care about folks having access to food in their neighborhood. And we will be passionately planting fruit trees as well as nut trees. We've been working with our incredible partners at Baton Rouge Green and at the East Baton Rouge Parish Housing Authority to make sure that our community gardens across the parish have fruit trees at them. And it's a long play, I know, Julie, to think about fruit trees, because so many of them take a few years to get established and really start bearing fruit. Our citrus trees generally take, you know, somewhere in the range of 3 to 5 years, around 4 to 5, to really produce. But then they're producing for years and years and years to come. So trees are an investment in the future of our community. Folks won't immediately be able to go and harvest from every single one of those or sit under them and get shade. But we know that for years to come, our children and our children's children will be able to enjoy those plantings.
And a big part of this is Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome's office. You work very closely with her office. Tell us about that connection in the context of this project.
We are so grateful to the mayor's office. Specifically, the Baton Rouge Community Farm would not exist without the investments of Healthy BR, which is the 501c3 associated with the mayor's office addressing health inequities across the city. Healthy BR has been convening a number of local organizations for years to do collective impact work addressing food insecurity as well as building safe communities a number of ways. We work with a program called Go Get Healthy and Kelly Rogers at the city, who have been instrumental in making sure that initial funding existed for the farm to be there, to start growing food, to start experimenting and really seeing if we could do agroforestry in a public community-based way in Baton Rouge. And so the mayor's office was instrumental in those initial investments, as well as just technical support for us as a smaller nonprofit and for us as a community-based organization that really wanted to have a big impact within the city. And so the mayor's initial investment in and support and collaboration in this program has allowed us to be at a place where we could leverage a larger grant opportunity like this one through the U.S. Forest Service right now to bring $6 million through the Walls Project to Baton Rouge. And I know the mayor's office has also been supporting, you know, other local partners, including our incredible collaborators at Southern University in their grant planning as well for their projects. It's so crucial for us to have municipal level partners in this work who are willing to think about how our city can be in the future, how we can collectively grow, what we can do that will impact people beneficially, you know, in the environment and economics and in human health outputs.
And one of the most important tie-ins, we're going to talk about this when we come back after this break, but is affordable housing and the pieces of property where affordable housing is looked for here in East Baton Rouge Parish. We're going to talk about how this project is going to assist there as Louisiana receives more than $24 million across the state from the U.S. Forestry Service in this effort to be more climate resilient. Stay with us. And welcome back to our final segment here on Talk Louisiana. And we're talking about a historic investment by the U.S. Department of Agriculture through the USDA Forest Service across the country, really $1 billion in being invested across the country as part of the Inflation Reduction Act. And that is, of course, part of a historic $1.5 billion investment in the Forest Service's Urban and Community Forestry Program. Why is this important? We're talking with S.K. Grohl with the Walls Project, Baton Rouge Community Farm, who are part of the entities who are receiving these grants. And one of the things we mentioned and we're talking about just before the break, S.K., is the tie-in with this project to affordable housing. Why is there a tie to what you hope to accomplish with more planting, more community farms, more getting folks outdoors and increasing their ability to be earned, to be employed? Why is there a tie-in there with affordable housing and the need, the really desperate in some situations need for more affordable housing in East Baton Rouge Parish?
I mean, we deserve an equitable city across the board, right? A city that is livable and thrivable for all people that are in it. And I think that that really, we see the connection between food and housing in that so much. We see the connection between trees and housing in that so much. And so when we're doing food and agroforestry-based work at Baton Rouge Community Farm, we're thinking about how people live their lives across the board. Because if you can feed someone or you can teach them to grow, but they don't have access to a safe place to live, we're not really improving their lives and their outcomes, right? So we partner, and also when we have gardens in certain spaces in the parish, but if people can't get there because of transportation barriers, because of housing barriers, because of other types of inequities, then again, we're not really impacting their lives. And so one of the things that we were able to do over the last few years was partner with the incredible folks at the East Baton Rouge Parish Housing Authority and bring community gardens from the Baton Rouge program to 11 different sites across the parish. And so we're growing right where people are living, and we're being able to do, you know, both agroforestry right there, as well as workshops that hopefully show folks how that garden can operate as part of their lives and part of their meals ongoing, but also how agroforestry and these skills to grow can be a part of their future employment. So we care about being a part of those communities so, so deeply. And this past spring, we were able to work with Baton Rouge Green and EBRPHA to bring 100 trees to 8 of those sites, which was an incredible feat of community work and planting those trees and getting orchards established at those gardens. And what we're going to see going forward is the acceleration of that 10 times over. So more than 1,000 trees are going to be planted at EBRPHA properties, and we'll be able to have a real forestry management plan for that portfolio of properties. You know, BREC and EBRPHA, two critical partners on this project, are some of the largest landholders in the parish. And so it really matters for us in working with them, as well as collaborating with the city and other larger entities, to think about what does it mean to do region-wide, city-wide ecological management. You know, how can we, with our very small program, impact some of the like ecological futures of our city so that we have a greener space to be in that has better water and better air quality, as well as jobs for folks. And so the housing authority space has been a space where, you know, they really care about housing. They really care about making sure that everybody in our community has access to housing, and are doing a lot of development work and construction along those lines to make sure that there is more affordable housing over the next few years than there has been in the past few years, right? As they're doing that, there are some trees that are going to come down based on construction and development. We are so grateful to work with partners who, even as they're developing land, are really committed to replacing those trees and to making sure that tree canopy is spread throughout our parish and throughout their portfolio of land in our parish in an equitable way.
If you'd like to share a question or join the conversation with SK Grohl, the number is 1-877-217-5757. We're talking about a really groundbreaking new project with a $6 million grant to the Walls Project and Baton Rouge Community Farm as we increase tree canopy and grow agroforestry here, even in the capital city area. Also, Southern University received a $9.5 million grant from the U.S. Forest Service as well for 12 projects under Southern's leadership to enhance tree canopy, parks, and nature and improve workforce and leadership capacity in disadvantaged communities. If the public wants to get involved in this project, share with us a little bit, SK, about how the neighborhoods where you're planting these 11 sites that are already underway, and then you're talking about more than 1,000 trees coming in the plans for this project as it moves forward over the next several years. But how are the communities and the housing and the neighborhoods where these trees are being planted receiving this project at this point? I know we're talking about really people like me who live in the city and we're not really farmers, but how is it being received in the neighborhoods?
We've had so much positive feedback. We are so incredibly grateful to our neighbors consistently who just show up and really show us a ton of support. So our largest farm site is at Brex Howe Community Park off of Winburn Avenue in the 805 zip code. And we host regular volunteer opportunities out there. So if anyone around the parish ever wants to get involved, you can check out. The link to sign up is on our website, thewallsproject.org/Baton Rouge. You can sign up for the Walls Project newsletter, and those opportunities will go out through there as well. You can check us out on social media at Walls Project and at Baton Rouge. We are always excited for folks to get involved. And if, you know, Julie, like you, you don't have, you're not a farmer, you live in the city, you're not growing at home. We work with folks of all skill levels. So if you've never picked up a shovel or gotten your hands dirty, we want to talk to you and we want to work with you about, and if you're somebody who's been growing forever and you've got a green thumb and this is something that your grandparents did and it's in your bones in a different way, we want to work with you too. We are so excited about our city having a thriving food system and a thriving ecology, and everybody has a part in that, whether it's something that you just want to learn about one time because there's a cute or fun event at the farm, or it's something that you actually find a passion for and you want to stay involved with. We want to work with you. And so, yes, please, to anybody who wants to get involved, there will be tons of opportunities for both workshops and educational opportunities going forward, as well as, you know, boots in the ground, hands in the dirt, tree and crop planting going forward. So please just follow the Walls Project and Baton Roots and sign up for those, because there is already things happening. Once a month, we have a free event at the farm called So Good Saturday. It is the first Saturday of every month, and we have some movement workshops, sometimes art workshops, and a lot of good gatherings there. So that's 10 a.m. to noon every first Saturday of the month at Brex Howell Park. And like I said, there will be so many more opportunities over the next few years to get involved in all parts of this program, whether you're looking to be one of the apprentices who is switching careers or skilling up in a different way, or you just want to come to one workshop one time. There's so many ways to plug in.
Do you think that you're beginning to see perhaps young people who may not have contemplated a career or working at times in their life in either the forestry or the farm area in terms of what might actually be their job or their career that maybe wouldn't have thought about it before they had sort of an introduction to this project, Baton Roots Community Farm, or projects like that are sprouting up around the city?
Absolutely. We are seeing that impact on young people every single day. We see former students who came through our high school Hustle and Grow program who then come back wanting to volunteer with us or wanting to join our work as farmers. There is so much that can be done when you show young folks that there are, you know, career opportunities in a place, that there's going to be economic opportunities going forward. And, you know, one of the things that we're thinking about along with the collaborators on this grant is that it's one thing to plant trees, right? But the maintenance of those trees is an ongoing investment. And also the maintenance of our, you know, our urban forests, our urban landscape is something that we as a community can decide to do and hopefully decide to do in truly transformational ways. And that tree maintenance, that forestry maintenance, that urban planning that integrates, you know, ecology in a different way, those are job opportunities that can provide some real economic benefit to our region, but hopefully provide really livable, thrivable careers for individuals.
And this project really is covering, we mentioned before, nearly 400 projects nationwide. The Urban and Community Forestry Program supports something called the Justice 40 Initiative, which aims to ensure that 40% of the overall benefits of certain federal investments flow to disadvantaged communities that are marginalized, underserved, and lack access to trees and nature. And really, as you describe your vision this morning, you can see in the vision that you have, SK, and the Walls Project and Baton Roots Community Farm, not only equalizing our community and in providing the same opportunities across the different segments of our community, but maybe even also connecting, working to help us come together as we're outside with trees and nature, and really the idea that we can have a vision of what we want in our community and move forward together to make it a reality rather than just feeling like it's sort of out of our control. Is that also kind of some of the thoughts as you look forward into the future with this project?
Absolutely, Julie. I think that's so beautifully put. I really believe that all of us have, you know, a role in figuring out what kind of communities we want to live in, what kind of future we want to live in, right? And so for Baton Roots, we really imagine a future where environmental equity and economic equity are centered in our community and where folks have access to that. But we all have a role in dreaming up that future together. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, you know, connecting with nature can bring us closer to that. Connecting with each other in this way can bring us closer to that. So it truly is a transformational thing to take part in some of these projects.
S.K. Grohl with the Walls Project, Baton Roots Community Farm. You're going to be seeing a lot of action, a lot of trees going in the ground, more than 1,000 trees growing from their 11 sites now to many more, I'm sure. This has been brought to you, Talk Louisiana has, by First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. We're so glad you joined us today. Jim will be back later this week, and I'm Julie Baxter Payer, and really appreciate your joining the conversation today. And stay with us.